Blog Talk Radio.
I stroll through the picture, what I've left behind. You want again. I'm locked up in memories, they all intertwine. The memories in my mind. I know tomorrow, 'cause that dawn will come. You will never know just what you have done.
Good evening. Excuse me. Good evening, and welcome to the Stop Child Abuse Now show. This is scan number 2520. That's 2520. I'm Carol Levine, and I will be running this show tonight. We have a wonderful guest, and I'm so happy she's here. And we have a nice-sized panel going on here. This is good. And in a second, I will bring her on. Before I do that, though, I do read the mission statement, because there are people who are listening for the first time, and they should know a little bit more about NASCA, okay, and what we do. So we do have a single purpose at NASCA, and that is to address issues related to child abuse and trauma, including sexual assault, violent and physical abuse, emotional trauma, and neglect. And we do so two different ways. Number one is educating the public, okay, especially about, you know, things that are, information about getting society over the taboo of discussing childhood sexual abuse. This is a biggie. All right, presenting facts showing child abuse to be a pandemic. It is a worldwide problem. We know this. It's not just in the United States. Number two, offering hope and healing through numerous paths, providing many services to adult survivors of child abuse, and information for anyone interested in many issues involving prevention, intervention, and recovery. That's something I'm very much into, prevention, okay? I think we all are on this panel, prevention. I also want to give out the telephone number. The number is 646-595-2118. That's 646-595-2118. And it's always good when people call in. We have a nice-sized panel, but it's always good when people call in and even add more to the panel, okay? And we can answer probably any of the questions you have, you know, because we are long-time survivors. Most of us here are long-time survivors. And let's see, what else did I want to say? I guess that's about it. Okay, so let me introduce our guest, and her name is Holly Perreault. And she's from North Ireland. She's a child survivor, child abuse survivor. And she's a new ambassador also for Northern England, or Ireland, Northern Ireland. I want to say, everyone out there, the ambassadors, please, please contact me. I've been trying to contact you. And if you have any questions, my telephone number is out there. It's on the contact page if you don't happen to have it. Ambassadors, we want you to, you know, if you could just call in once a month even, okay, that would be great. Okay, we have an ambassador on tonight. We have Darlene from Tennessee, and I'm really happy she's here. And we have also Holly. She's, from Ireland. Okay, Holly grew up in a small fishing town in Washington State. And she claims that her stepfather started to abuse her at the age of three. Now, that's all I'm going to say, because this is Holly's story, okay? And as we go along, what we do on this show is we go to the panel, okay, a few times, and we allow for them to ask questions and so forth, or make comments. So, Holly, why don't you go ahead and tell us about your story. Go ahead.
Okay, great. Thank you so much for having me. I appreciate it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so I did grow up in a small town in Washington State, and my mom, when she was pregnant with me, she started dating a man. She wasn't married, so she started dating someone that was kind of new to the area, and they ended up getting married about 2.5. And when I was 3 is when the abuse started. He had actually beat my mother so bad she ended up in the hospital, and when she threatened to take me and leave, he promised her he would never touch her again, but then I think the abuse started shortly after that. And the reason I know I was 3 is because my mom actually told me that I had told at 3. But it was 1970s, early 70s, and when she tried to get any support about it, people told her she was crazy. He was a very popular man in the town, and she just didn't have any support to go through with anything. So it was just, I never said another word. I never talked about it again until later, which I'll talk about in a minute. So I was an only child. I was actually a pretty happy kid, spoiled by my grandmother and my aunt and uncle. I did feel a lot of love in my small family. Of course, from what I understand, they did not know that he was abusing me, and it was happening at least once a week when my mom went to work. So, or he got bold enough when I got a little bit older that he would even try to abuse me in front of my mom, like when we were on vacation. And I remember a time we were in Hawaii, and it's one of those things that really stick out for me is, my mom was sitting on the beach, and we were in the water, and even then he wouldn't leave me alone. So he was very bold, unfortunately. So the abuse continued until I was 11, and it finally stopped because he and my mother divorced, and he got married right away to someone else. And I did see him on the weekends for that first year, but he really didn't mess with me except for one time, and I fought back and said no that time. I don't know why, but I must have felt old enough and strong enough to do it. So had it, you know, ended at that point, I think my story would have turned out differently. But I always tell people that Ted Danson, Glenn Close, and Amelia saved me. So I'll tell you a little bit about that. Mm-hmm. So it had gone a couple years. Nothing was said, and my mom actually remarried to a wonderful man, and we had moved several times, actually. I moved many, many times when I was in high school. So I was 14, and back in those days, they would have, like, an evening show every night. I think it was even ABC. I can almost remember it. And they had a show playing that was very provocative for 1984, and it had Ted Danson and Glenn Close in it, and it was called Something About Amelia. And I was watching it alone. And I remember my mom was getting ready to go to work. And I always tell people it was my God moment. So the show was, it was about abuse, sexual abuse, but it was about that moving on because the older girl was getting too old and then starting to look at abusing the sister. And I say it was my God moment because it was like I got hit over the head with a 2x4 and I just turned off the TV, got up, and went and told my mom. I mean, I just told her straight out. So the reason I told her is because my abuser had married a woman that had 2 little kids, and I call them the littles now. I always have called them the littles. But they had a little boy and a little girl who were young. So I was 14. I think they were maybe 5 and 7 at this time. So after calling CPS and the police, the next day, which is probably pretty controversial now, but these detectives asked me to go with them down to their school and actually be the one that asked the little if this was happening to them. Mm-hmm. So I did do that, and I was 14. And I will say that was the worst day of my life, for sure. He had been abusing them for a couple of years already and just doing horrific things to them. So the next step after that was he did get arrested. And this is a very small town, and it ended up being in the newspaper. And although, you know, it was legal to put my name or the little's names in there, they put his name in, and I meant there was no secret who the kids were at that point.
Yeah.
So by then everybody knew, right? The whole town knew. But he did get arrested, and the decision was made that the littles were obviously too little, but that even though they had said at the time of the statute of limitations that they did let me testify, so I actually testified against him. And his sister also testified because she had not said a word for 30 years. He had sexually abused her all through high school. And so between my testimony and her testimony, he was arrested. Well, he pled out, and he did a plea bargain to go to jail for indecent liberties, which is basically he got charged with fondling and inappropriate touch instead of, you know, rape and horrific child sexual abuse.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, that decision will come back to haunt us in just a minute, because I'll tell you more about that, which is probably really going to piss people off, but it's an important piece.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So he went to jail for just about a year, is all. And when he got out, he and the little's mom, they moved back in together with the littles in the house because she never did believe us. And she let him move back in, which mm-hmm. he then got arrested again for breaking parole. He spent more time in jail for breaking parole than he did for the abuse.
Yeah.
So he did spend another couple years in prison. So after that, so at this point, I am, 15, 16. So I did what any young girl who didn't feel safe was, and I married a United States Marine when I was 18. Mm-hmm. And we were actually married for 23 years and have two great kids that are now adults, of course. And my husband knew before that, this had happened to me, but I meant at the time I felt, well, I'm going to get away from this scot-free. I didn't go to any counseling. I was leading a normal high school life. Everything felt pretty normal.
Mm-hmm.
But of course it wasn't. So if we fast forward to about 15 years ago, my husband and I were struggling. And he started doing some research, actually. And he called me one day. I was actually living somewhere else. And he called me one day and told me that he had found out that my abuser had been removed from the sexual predator list in Washington State. Mm-hmm. And not only was he removed, he was invited off by the state for good behavior,
mm-hmm.
Which still really frustrates me to even talk about it because there's no way he could have just waltzed out of jail with no treatment and been, not going to hurt anybody again. So
that's right.
Right. His good behavior was what I call, he just didn't get caught. And so when I dug into it deeper, when I called, my husband had a phone number. He said, call this number. It's a detective that can tell you more about it. And crazy enough, it was actually one of the detectives who had worked on my own case, which was so surprising to me. But he said it was one of the hardest cases he had ever taken in his entire career. So he remembered it very clearly. And he told me that there was a law in the state that is there to protect people who are accused and they're actually innocent. And this law was put in place so they're not stuck on the sexual predator list their whole life, which mm-hmm. is extremely bizarre, but it's a true thing, or it was, and this was, 10 years ago, still 10 years ago, I think that law still existed. And so when I suggested that maybe I knew where he lived, that I would start putting up signs around his town, the detective informed me that he could come back and sue me for slander for doing that. And that the only thing I could do is just let it go and lobby someday or fight in another way. So, very
see, that's what's so. That yes, it is. It's very. I'm getting angry when I'm listening to all of this, because so often, the abuser, the monster. That's what I call them. To me, they're monsters. They never get the proper sentencing. And it's only once in a great while you'll see someone got like 40 years or something, something like that. And you feel satisfied. Some people go to prison for life because maybe there are so many children involved in so many different situations and instances. But it's rare, And even one, we know this, that even one is too much, Now, in your case, you're speaking about several, And there's so many of us who have similar stories, but not the same. And we're all very angry that our abusers either didn't get caught, or maybe we told and nothing happened because the adults didn't do anything. Or the police, goes into court and the judge was lax, He's not a good judge. And should be made to step down because this is ruining children's lives. And there is not enough, it's not even a matter of revenge. It's just not enough justification, And we need to feel like we matter, like what happened to us did matter. We are people. We were children. And our needs were not taken care of. Let me ask you how you felt when your stepfather started to abuse you at such an early age. What did you do? How did you feel?
Well, I clearly don't remember. Well, initially I must have felt pretty mad because I told right away. I said something, but when nothing was done, I just didn't tell again because it didn't appear to make a difference. So I spent my 8 years trying to keep this secret, trying to keep his secret, because if not, I was very, very close to my mom, to my grandmother, and my aunt and uncle. I was very, very close, and he used them as my weapon of how much they would hate me and, pretty much how much they would hate me. And so it was 8 years of trying to protect his secrets. And it just went on. I really did everything I could to not give him any power, even as a little kid. I did that. And, I got good grades and I just tried to live a good life and have fun and, compartmentalize it as much as I could.
Right. I'm glad that you're able to, I guess you did well, as it appears, in school. So often kids can't do well, they can't concentrate. They know what they're going to go home to, just like you did. And, everybody's different. Everybody's different. I was so filled with anger and rage and with all the abuses that I had seen in my lifetime, it was more than one. And it doesn't matter whether it's more than one, because one is too much, One abuser is too much. And it seems like, it's such you were very brave in telling, because you see, if something is done and the person goes to jail, and they go to jail for a good long time, so many lives are spared and so many children are, not abused. I mean, let's face it, some of us get killed, right? So, by telling, you get that person off the street. And then if they do the right thing, if the courts do the right thing and they don't let these people out, for a good long time, and that's a good long time that, the children are not going to be abused, So the sentencing is totally off, and that's something that has to be changed. It just simply does. So I'm going to go to the panel now, and then we'll get back to your story. But I want to thank you for all the that you did try to tell. And, I want to say one other thing, too. So often in families, when there's children that are younger, you try so hard to protect them. If you know what's going on, if it happened to you, and these children are near you, you're able to help. and I thank you for doing that. Okay, that was a good thing for you to do. And it must have been a scary thing, too. You know, I can't picture it not being scary.
Yeah.
It's always scary.
Yeah.
It's always scary.
It was scary. I was by myself in the courtroom. Yeah, it was scary.
You bet it was.
With
you
him,
bet.
He was in the courtroom with me, right? So there's, which is ridiculous when I look back at it now. Like, how did that ever happen?
Okay, well, let me go to the panel. I see we have an 848 telephone number here, and I'm going to bring this person on and see who it is. 848, who am I speaking to? This is Carol Levine, Stop Child Abuse Now show.
Hi, Carol. It's Katarina calling from Canada. I'm using an app, so my number is showing like this, but it's me, and I'm glad to be here.
Oh, I'm so happy you're here also. Thank you so much. I have to go to beginning of the panel. Let me ask you, how long have you been on? Because I'm closing my left eye. It's still injured. how long have you
I literally just joined. I heard a little bit.
Okay.
So I'd like to hear more before I speak, for sure.
Okay, sweetie. Let me go up to the top here. Let's go to Darlene, okay? Darlene from Tennessee. You have a comment or a question?
Yes, I'll tell her how strong she is by sharing her story, that this is difficult to discuss. So I want to kudos to you. And I'm sorry that they did not put your father or stepfather into the prison longer.
Mm-hmm.
And,
thank you.
He deserved. Like being a friend, we have a special thing in our minds, right? And we say we got to put the parents that hurt us. We put them in his house that's deserted, right? And it's full of spiders. And we say, roll it in spiders. You know, then we put that person in that house of spiders, right? And it's like, spiders, poor things, ain't going to have much to eat, are they? We have a ball like that, and I like that. I know that sounds bad, but that kind of helps me with my anger, how I like to put my daddy, though he's deceased, and he never went to jail about any of the stuff he done. So I understand it all too well. And the safety and him still being around other kids and probably still, it sounded like he was very manipulative, easily, what's that, charisma, charismatic, where he could get his way, talk people into doing what he wanted. Is that true?
Absolutely. Yes, absolutely.
Yeah,
that's what I get
out
of it. Yeah, well, that's what I figured with these things. Just a year here and a year there, you know. Just it's like slap on the wrist, and it's like slap in the face to all y'all, though.
Yeah.
And I'm sorry about that. I'm sorry
the
system failed you, too.
They thought they were protecting me at the time. When you look back, they were trying to save me from going up against his lawyer, but it's had such repercussions years and years later that I guess they probably would have never guessed.
Right.
Well, you know, that happens
still
too often, though. Yeah, it does. It happens too often.
So
we
much.
All know that. Yeah. Thank you for that,
darling.
Yes, and
it does need to change.
We need a lot of change, and I don't know what it's going to take to do it. I really don't.
Let me go
down to your friend William here. This is William from Australia. He's using the Skype number here, Bill. That's who that is. It's not Bob. It's William. Okay. So, William, yeah, go ahead. If you have a question or a comment you'd like to make.
Well, yeah, the court systems. Now, when that was in Ireland, wasn't it, the court system she was under?
No, it was in Washington State, in the United States.
Oh, okay. So it was
in
Ireland
now. Yeah.
Oh, okay. Because the English and that have a different, Ireland and that have kind of a different court system than what the U.S. does.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. No, it was in Washington in the 80s. So it was 1984.
Yeah, and that was some of the early legislation and stuff that hadn't been on the books yet.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
They were just bringing about some of that stuff.
Yeah, we looked at it tonight, what the legislation is, and they consider themselves one of the toughest states, which I could not believe they even wrote that, but they consider themselves one of the toughest states on sexual abuse predators.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I just want to mention, too, that we have a little bit of a delay here going on. So I'm going to manage to slow my voice down because I always talk so fast so that, so it sounds a little better. But thank you for that, William. That's good. And it is just so, it's just so aggravating. There's so much that needs to be changed, Holly. In all the states and in the countries all over, it doesn't matter, with the court system. And when the sentencing that these pedophiles or / sex offenders, pedophiles, of course, is prepubescent, and the sex offenders, it's all sex offense, But they seem to many times not get what they deserve. And then the people just feel... the victims, we feel like, justice hasn't been served. And the story that you're showing here and you're telling here tonight shows several different times when things were just simply wrong, and that happens too often. Okay, let me go down to Bill here in Florida. Go ahead, Bill, if you have a question or a comment.
Yeah, I just want to tell you that she's recently moved to relatively recently moved to Northern Ireland, and that's where she lives, and she's become our Northern Ireland ambassador. But most of this story takes place in Washington State, so that was the confusion there. It's a shame that people actually roll off of sex offender lists, but that's because there are three levels of sex offenders, and only the highest level of sex offenders that are lifelong on the list, and the others can be rolled up. Level one, which is the least offensive, is people like who commit lewd conduct and stuff, or maybe expose themselves, something like that. They're only on the list a short time. The second level is more serious stuff, but doesn't rise to the level of the third group. So the second level is probably where her stepdad was. And if they behave well and they are not caught again for a period of time, they can roll off that list. But then the third level, which is the most extreme kind of sexual offenses against children, stay on the lists. And this is in general, because frankly, state by state, the laws are a little different. But that's in general how it works. So in Washington State, it sounds like Holly's stepdad was able to escape being on the permanent list. And I just wanted to explain that. Holly, I'm really glad you're here tonight. I know we all are. And we really appreciate your energy and interest in representing NASCA and Ireland and Northern Ireland. And we want you to, take the bull by the horns and get us involved in Ireland in any way you can. Or any of the UK, okay? You have a free hand at that, and we'll support you in any way we can. All right, we'll hear more about that, Carol, later in the show. But I just want to encourage her right now. She's doing a great job, so thank you.
No, Marie. She absolutely is. Yeah.
Thank you very much. Thanks.
Mm-hmm. You bet. Let's go down to Katrina. I think she has a little bit to say now. She's been on for long enough where she can make a comment if she likes. Go ahead, Katrina.
Yeah, I'm so glad that you're telling your story today. And I guess I did get bits and pieces as I was listening in. And I'm really sorry that it was like a trusted family member that abused you, even if it was a stepfather. That shouldn't be happening. It just shouldn't be happening. As children, we're so vulnerable, and to find the words to speak up for yourself, to stop dissociating, to come to terms with a harsh reality. That's not something that should be part of a child's life, but it was part of your life and your story. And I'm really sorry you had to go through that, but I'm glad that now you're a thriver and a survivor, and look, you're making waves in a different country and here internationally. So, you know, thank you for being you, and thank you for being strong and for speaking up regardless, as hard as it was, because it makes a big difference in the world, even if it's those small steps. Yeah.
Thank you. Thank you.
Yeah. Yeah. We're always proud when people do that. You know, we all have our gifts. I mean, we go through hell at times on Earth. We just simply do. I don't know why. But those of us that survive and who get the help that we need, then it seems so many times we're drawn to this type of work, you know, this type of thing that we do, because we want so badly for other children not to go through what we went through. And then, too, but we need more than that. You know, we can educate, and it's very important to educate, you know, the society. It's very important. But I really wish there was more things happening in the school systems, because, like, okay, there was incest in my family. There's incest in other people's families. It's a given, okay? And where can the kids go? You know, who can they tell? If they tell people in their own family, you know, that this is happening, a lot of times it's like they don't care, or they're afraid, whatever the case might be, or they don't want to break the family up. But then there is always we, the victims, and we are victims at that point, which is children. We're stuck. We're stuck. And we see all these things happening. In your case, you knew that your stepfather was going to abuse the other two children. And it's a given case. I mean, people know. Studies have been done many times. And quite frankly, the pedophiles are pedophiles, and they don't stop what they do, okay? And, you know, if he went to jail for 10 years and he got out, and within a year or two, in fact, that's been studied also recently, very recently, they do tend to, you know, go back to their own ways. Absolutely. Absolutely. There seems to be no cure for it. And in the midst of all that time of waiting to see if this person is going to change, think about all of the kids that person goes to and abuses one way or another, okay? The first-time offenders, since Bill brought this up, the first-time offenders are known to abuse approximately 128 times, and that's maybe 10 times with one child, 5 times with another. Do the math here in your own head, but it come to 128 before they're actually caught. That's the first-time offenders. And this is why I want so badly for the laws to change for the first-time offenders, because they get a little bit more than a slap on the hand. After all, it's only the first time they were caught, okay? They look at the individual case that they were caught, you know, from. They don't think about who they'd injured before that. And I think that's one law that really needs to be changed, and I think all the others should be changed as well. You have the tier ones, you have the tier twos, you have the tier threes, yes. But, you know, anyway, let's get on, you know, with your story. Within 2 weeks, I checked myself into a 30-day intensive trauma program. Tell us a little bit about the programs. I think there's two times you had done that. Why you did it, how it helped you, and what you suggest to people. Go ahead.
Sure. Okay, so I guess I'll step back just a little bit post-court times and after I got married. So as I mentioned, I was married very young. I had two kids. Had pretty really successful career in a couple different big organizations, and really thought I held all the power to this. But the scars definitely would show up, and they were showing up in my marriage. I felt abandoned. I would I didn't have an alcohol or drug problem, which today I don't know how I escaped that. I really don't. But I would numb other ways by either shopping or working, keeping as busy as I could with my kids, and just trying to be the best all the time of whatever I was trying to do. But when I was 40, my life came just crashing down on me right at 40. And it ended up being the demise of my marriage. So I wasn't faithful, and my family became aware of it. And it was a horrific time for my children and my husband and myself. And we had made a promise to each other that we would put our kids first. And the first thing we did was go to divorce counseling on how we were going to get through this in the most kind way and putting our children first. And that decision and the decision to go through who we did, which we went and saw a male counselor, set the rest of my life up, I think. And what happened there is he told me very clearly that if I did not get some help, because he could not believe I hadn't been to counseling in 40 years and had this seemingly successful life, but he said it will just continue to haunt me in one way or the other. And it would keep showing up, and as I got older, it would show up in every relationship, etc. So unbeknownst to me, at this time I lived in Arizona, and I did not even know that there was such a thing, that there was a trauma program that you could go to, that you didn't have to be recovering from, you know, a drug addiction or an alcoholic addiction or a food issue. I meant you could just go because you had trauma in your life as a child. And this place happened to be 30 minutes from where I lived. And so within 2 weeks, I had checked myself into a 30-day intensive trauma program in Arizona. And what I learned, which I had no clue was happening, of course, but what I learned was that I was holding on to so much guilt about not telling sooner, and that the littles were affected because of that. Mm-hmm. And it took 30 days of people pouring into me and trying to convince me that I was a kid when it happened, and that it wasn't my responsibility, then I would not have known better. How could have I known better, or even ever thought he would have gone on to hurt the kids at that age? And so those 30 days, I would say probably saved my life from a perspective of giving me, after that, being able to give me a very full life. Mm-hmm. So during that time, I was in there with other people who had experienced trauma. And you mentioned this before, Carol, but it does not matter if you were touched inappropriately for a 20 seconds at a camp, mm-hmm. or if you had been abused 15 years. And it also doesn't matter if it happened last week or if it happened, you know, 40 years ago. There is recovery programs and support. And it doesn't have to be an intensive treatment program. I mean, there's lots and lots of ways. So after I came out of that program, which consisted of counseling, a lot of group work, you know, an EMDR session to help me get rid of a couple really key memories that were just still haunting me, mm-hmm. just different types of therapeutic options and group options, writing a grief letter to my abuser. And then even the group work was really, really important, a lot of psychodrama and trust work. So it was a full-on 30 days. And then when I got out, I continued counseling, and I went into an SLA meeting, which is a sex and love addiction meeting. And this is a type of meeting that is set up for not just so you can go to a sex addiction meeting, but a sex and love addiction meeting is a lot of people in those meetings had relationship issues. There were a lot of survivors in those meetings, sexual anorexia, just, you know, maybe continuous relationships that that SLA meeting was then my support system that I had through the 30 days, and I continued that until I moved out of the area.
Mm-hmm.
So I personally think everybody deserves 30 days without their laptop and their phone working, getting to do that. And I felt very blessed that I was able to take time off work. An important piece of that that I want to mention, especially for those in the United States, is when I went in there, it was very expensive. And at that point, I did not care because I was at my own personal rock bottom. So I just charged it up and said, I will figure it out. But I was able to fight with my insurance company, and they paid every penny. And I don't know, you know, that was 12 years ago, but I just want to put that out there because I spoke many times at this location afterwards, and I would always tell people that. And I did have someone tell me about 2 years later that they had took my advice and were able to do that as well. So I think it's important that, you know, insurance companies help us recover as well.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So
that is good. Yeah.
Yeah, it's really important. So, should I go on about what's happened since?
Sure. This is your show. You go ahead and talk about whatever you want. Go ahead.
Okay. So it's been 12 years since I was in that particular recovery program, and a lot has happened actually. I did do another 2-week outpatient intensive program about 4 years ago to work on what I call my mom issues and my abandonment issues. I had a lot of stuff going on with my mom that I had to make a tough decision to not speak to her anymore, and it was awful to do that for your mom, but it had to be done for my own mental health. And I always wondered why it took so long for me to be able to do it. And someone told me that I just, you know, it was when you're strongest is when you have to deal with your most difficult things. And mom stuff was pretty difficult. So I did another 2-week outpatient intensive, which was very similar to the inpatient, but you stayed at your own place. You chose a hotel, and the work was, you know, it was 12-hour days instead of 24/7. But that still a lot of stuff from the abuse still came up during that time. So it just goes to prove that doesn't go away. There's always, you know, different things for me that might come up probably forever. you just don't know. But in general, I am happy. I have had a really great career. And I guess the exciting piece is what I'm considering my second act. So my second act is really about how I'm going to be able to give back to survivors, like what Bill said. He has seen part of what I'm trying to do. And I met someone that gave me that freedom to say, why aren't you quitting your big old fancy job and going and doing the thing you want to do? And so I did. I quit my job at Microsoft, which was a great company to work for, and allowed me to actually prepare for this. And I met somebody who is Irish, so I moved to Northern Ireland to be with him. Mm-hmm. And I went back to university to take a communications and counseling therapeutic course. Mm-hmm. And in the last year, I have worked at the domestic violence and sexual abuse organization here in Northern Ireland called Nexus. In several different roles. Yep. And then my ultimate goal is my very big dream is actually to open a inpatient intensive program in Northern Ireland, which is a huge deal because they don't even have, they don't have anything like it. They've not seen anything like it here. Even small intensive programs just are not a thing. Mm-hmm. Even support groups aren't a thing. And so I'm starting small by just starting an ASCA group in January.
Good.
And so an adult survivor of child abuse support group. It will be online, obviously. I'm starting there. And then after I finish my dissertation this year, I hope to take a trauma certification course because I'm a certified coach. And then just keep working at making it talking about it, public speaking, and just making sure people know my big platform, obviously, for me, is why you've got to tell. You've got to tell no matter what, because hopefully I've just displayed tonight of what happens when his sister didn't tell and then when I didn't tell. And I think no matter how old we are, that we can't underestimate the fact that we may have a parent or a grandfather that hurt us, and if we didn't say anything, the chances are pretty good they're going to move on to other people, or they were also abusing our sisters or brothers, or they could be abusing our children, or it could just go on and on and on. And so the importance of telling is to save others and to stop the cycle. So
that's right.
That's my goal.
That's right.
Yeah.
Well, I'm really very, very proud of you. I want to make a point here also, too, because, a lot of times in some families, not just some families, in many families, they'll say, we'll take care of our own business. Okay? Mm-hmm. They're not, in other words, they're not going to turn the people in because, like you mentioned, so far back when, the embarrassment, the humiliation when your stepfather's name came out and they knew who the children were and all this other stuff. And that's so very true, okay? This happens. And it happens, too, like in families, they don't want, they used to say, their dirty laundry, held outside. They'll take care of their own family. They'll take care of their own business. So what do? I'll tell you what they do. They get out if they believe the kid, right? I mean, we have so many problems in our way, don't we? So if they believe the child that this is what's happened, that they have been abused by this individual or individuals, they'll beat them up. They'll kick them out of the family. They don't tell the police, okay? No investigation is done. And certainly no chance of jail time is done. Not for that anyway. And they go on their merry way, okay? They might leave the state. And this is, I'm telling you a little bit of what happened in my family with a couple of them, all right? They left the state. That didn't stop their actions. And I don't care how old they are either. One was, when he left the state, I'd say maybe about 45 or 50, 5 years older than me, my brother. And an uncle who was much older than me. And he just continued on in another state. So you see, if we don't get these people off the street, if we don't get them incarcerated, and we take care of business our own way, that's not doing justice, for society. You might have a little sense of relief that that person got beaten up. I did a little bit, okay? But it didn't stop the problem. It's not a solution. The solution is to get the person off the street. So the very fact that you had done that at such an early age, and I know that you were scared, because I told at 7 1/2 on my uncle, and he did get beaten, not by someone in my family, but another family, because after I was taken out of that house, what did he do? He went to another kid, right? Just like I just said, just like we all know. And he got caught and he got beaten, so he left the state, and he continued on his merry way. So you see, justice has to be in the hands of the law. And the law has to handle the justice the right way. And the right way is to incarcerate that person and keep them off the streets so the society can be safer. Very, very, very important. Okay.
Yeah,
absolutely. I'm going to go back to the panel now. Darlene, you have some questions or a comment to make.
Wow, it blows me away at the strength that you pursue. Which that mean when it come out of the body, that you throw out there. You know what I mean? I hope somebody
you know
knows
what you
what
mean. Yeah. I know what you mean. Go ahead.
We exude, I guess. We're trying to think of what the right word is. Okay.
I know
but,
what you're saying. Go ahead.
Thank you so much for your strength and everything. And I'm just sitting back here listening, and I'm realizing how much, how close it is to some of my story, and I'm relating, and I'm like, I'm just in awe of you. Mm-hmm. And you're so strong, and I'm with you on you getting your degree. So I'm so glad you're speaking out against it as well.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Well, she's an example, honey. That's what she is, darling. She's an example to other people, okay, in the sense that she did tell. And she told at a young age, too, okay? And believe me, it's very frightening when you're a child, whether you're 7 and a half or whether you're 14, that, you know, that you tell, or 17 or whatever. And the point is you told, okay? And we cannot stop what happens. We can't stop those monsters, those people, those pedophiles, those sex offenders. We cannot stop them. But what we can do is, you know, is to tell, okay? So that, and hopefully, you know, the law does, you know, the right thing, like I just said. Because if they don't, they shouldn't get a year, for God's sake, like she was just talking about. You know, that's crazy. That's crazy.
Like you said earlier, something about the straw arm, the bullying type of situation that they kind of like do that puts fear in people. That's kind of like the kind that my dad had. So everybody was too afraid to tell on my dad. You know, the neighbors and other people knew about it, but nobody stopped it.
So. No, that's the fear factor. See, the fear factor gets in. And then with neighbors, they don't want to get involved because they're afraid of retaliation so often. Okay?
Exactly.
So they just keep, yeah, exactly is right. But I want to tell people out there, first of all, our number here is 646-595-2118. If you want to be a part of this conversation, we have a nice crew of people here tonight, and I'm very happy for that. And I hope a lot of you are learning from this. We have very, very good guests. And for God's sake, if you do know of a child that's being abused, you don't have to even get involved with that family. You can call the 1-800-4-A-CHILD hotline service. I've done that at 2 o'clock in the morning. I want to make sure that they're valid. They're very valid. That's 1-800-4-A-CHILD, okay? And a counselor will come, a trained counselor will come to the phone. And that's a nationwide number. And what they do is they contact people in your area, wherever you're from, and or they'll give you numbers that you can contact, and you can stay anonymous. You don't have to give your name. I think a lot of organizations are doing that now. But you don't have to give your name. Just tell them what you know and what you've seen or what you suspect. Because we know that the police would rather go to a house where maybe there's too much yelling going on. That's not good either, I'm just saying. But maybe they're not getting beaten or sexually abused or whatever. The point is they want to go and catch these people. Okay? They just simply do. So never be afraid or bashful about making that phone call, because you can be someone's hero. All of us on this panel needed a hero, okay? We needed a hero, and we didn't have it, okay? All right, let me go down the line here. William, is there something that you'd like to add or have a comment?
Yeah. Not much. I'm here in Alabama. I'm from Alabama, and the things that she's been talking about, that's true. A lot of the stuff that, you know, you had to deal with a lot of that, and that's the thing about a survivor. They've had to go through a lot, and the thing is how you overcome that, and that's the important part about how you overcome. Because a lot of people would get stuck and they don't have the support and stuff. And then that's the good thing about things like NASCA family and others. Because I did a little bit of volunteer through the Child Protective Services and Women's Protective Services. So I know a little bit about some of that stuff. And because Bill knows I got a law background too.
Mm-hmm.
So he knows. We know a lot about that stuff, and a lot of things that we've seen probably that it's just amazing how some of this stuff gets passed through and doesn't. But that's a lot, because law and the court systems and things and the family courts and things like that are very, very kind of weird and strange at times. But that's what Bill was talking about, the different classifications of the sex offenders and things like that, too. So,
that's right. Yeah,
and
that's right.
That's the only way it's going to get changed, though, is through legislation. And that's got to do with our House of Representatives and things like that. So they'll put the laws and change of the laws and that on statutes on the books through the court systems. And that's another
campaign. We have people working, you know, a few people anyway, working on situations like that, especially the statute of limitations. And it's a very slow process, very slow process. Remember that all throughout the court systems too, the Justice Department, all the whole nine yards, we have pedophiles in there also. There seems to blocks come up, you know, the problems come up. And for whatever reason, you know, it many times slows things down. I know of people who have tried very hard to get a law changed in their state. And they think they're almost there. They're very ready to bring out the champagne or whatever. And, you know, all of a sudden, bang, it just falls apart. So as long as we have these blocks, you know, it's hard. But we have to keep trying.
Well, the law in Washington State, my mom did write twice to the legislation when she found out about it, and she was sent back a letter that said, when they looked into it, it just wasn't worth spending the money to change it.
Mm-hmm.
And so that, again, that, I don't know what it is now. That was, you know, about 10 years ago, but that was their answer back then, is it wasn't something worth their money at the time.
Well, unfortunately, a lot of times, Holly, it is about money, okay? Like a person will go into court, and you would think, you know, that there's a case there, all right? They have gone through the system to get far enough to go into court, and, you know, and two thumbs up in the other courts, and they say, it should go to the Superior or Supreme Court, whatever, and they think they have it. And then, unfortunately, money talks. I've seen that. It's happened with me. Money talks.
Yep.
And
I agree.
You know, and then all of a sudden, oh yeah. And then all of a sudden, there's no more case. You know, that's just the way it is. So as long as we have a corrupt system, and there is a lot of corruption in the system, as long as we have those corrupt people, it's going to be another, you know, roadblock, you know, in the way. But we have to still keep fighting. Because if we don't fight, then it's just going to collapse altogether, and we're just not going to get anywhere, okay? So, you know, once in a while you'll find a judge that is honest, and he can't be paid off. Or maybe the lawyers can't be paid off, whomever is involved. And, you know, then you know, the case will go through, the person will get sentenced, and maybe they'll get a hefty sentence, okay? But if there's money involved, and a lot of times, like you know, too, then the person doesn't get what they should get. And that's just a damn shame. And I'm going to leave it at that because it makes me mad just thinking about it. Okay. Let's go down to Bill here in Florida. Go ahead, Bill.
Well, I want to emphasize that NASCA doesn't play a role in trying to change the legal system. Individuals who belong to NASCA may, but the organization itself is not allowed to lobby. We're a 501c3, and we're not allowed to lobby. However, the way change occurs is, as we get more of the public educated and caring about these issues, there are potential voices and votes, frankly, constituencies out there that, if they choose to, can kind of rise up and come together in their locale to make these changes, because they are legislative. That's just really what they are. And as far as money is concerned, you know, it costs a tremendous amount to deal with the child abuse system the way we're doing it now. It would not cost any more to do it better and do it smarter. Billions of dollars are spent right now every year, hundreds of billions every year on all the pieces that go into law enforcement and child protective services and incarceration of prisoners and on and the cost of counseling, on and on and on. Point being that our job as NASCA members is to be aware. We always talk about prevention, intervention, and recovery. Well, the first two are related to what we're talking about right now, where prevention is you try to teach children, educate children, so that they have at least some tools at their disposal while they're young to recognize that perhaps something that's going on with them is inappropriate and that they'll come to mom or dad or somebody trusted to divulge. Okay, that's prevention. You teach that to children. And intervention is our job to keep our eyes open and our ears open to identify when there might be, for example, a problem in a certain house on our block. And believe me, there's child abuse going on in every block of every city across the country. That's how big of a problem we have. So the point being that as we keep our ears and eyes open, it may occur to us that there's a house or two that, or a child or more, that, or a person that's acting strangely around children that needs to be investigated. And if we have that suspicion, we don't go after the person, but we need to report it. So that's what we can do. We can intervene by reporting to the appropriate authorities that we have a suspicion of a particular family or house, predator, whatever it is. And, you know, the point Carol was trying to make before was that, and Bill too, William too, you know, law enforcement knows a lot of these houses because eventually the same house gets reported on multiple times. It's like in domestic violence situations, cops will find themselves returning over and over to the same home until they can build a case or can conclude that something really violent has just occurred and they can make an arrest. But they know these houses. And then there are other houses they don't know yet. And as far as showing up at a house where they do a little investigation, they do a door knock, a talk at the door, maybe look around a little bit, and they conclude that there's nothing they can substantiate, they would rather do that 10 times over and over. They'd rather do that than not go to a house where a kid gets hurt or murdered. So this is what Carol was trying to say. The cops don't mind, you know, doing these wellness checks because they know that among those wellness checks, there are instances of child abuse and other kinds of abuse going on. So these are the points that I was going to make about the, you know, the discussion that we had gotten up to at this point, at this time in the show.
Yeah, all right, Carol, I thank you for that. No, you're welcome. Thanks a lot. You know, there's something that we have to understand also, too, and this is what happens. The police have a lot of information. They get a lot of information, and they're getting much better trained. A lot of times it's by people like us who go into universities. I've done it many times. And trained police officers what to look for, you know, with child abuse. I have some schooling, absolutely. But you don't have to have your PhD, all right? What's best is for people like ourselves, the survivors, to go in and talk to the people and speak to the police officers because a lot of times in their training, as they're being trained, they're not given enough information about child abuse. They just simply aren't. I have been shocked with what I've come up with, whether it be daycare centers, whether it be the police force and other organizations, that they have to learn how to spot child abuse and what to do with it. That's where the intervention comes in. Yes, we have to look for that, too, and we have to understand how to do intervention. And then, of course, we hope that the person or persons get recovery. We lead them to recovery. One thing I want to mention before we go on really quickly here is our website, okay? That's www.nasca.org, nasca.org. If you go to that website, you're going to find a wealth of information because I have used that website, our website, so many times that I can't tell you how many times. I make copies and I go out and do what I do, certainly not this year because of the COVID. But the point is this, We have a lot of information on our websites, and a lot of people can be educated that way too. And to listen to our show, or to listen, yes, to other shows, this is how we learn too, and how we spread the word. And there's just so many ways that we can help society, even by not listening to the shows. We can go out and hang information, make copies. I do it all the time. Ask permission first before you put on bulletin boards about child abuse. Okay, the signs of child abuse. We have that right on our website. And that way, people walking by the bulletin board, they say, ooh, I didn't know this could happen. I didn't know what to look for this. And they get educated that way. You'd be surprised how many people learn a lot of things just from doing that. So I just wanted to get that out there, too. And remember, with the police department, and I know this because I've worked with them. I worked with them in detention. What you have to do is, yes, they have all this knowledge. They understand all these things. But then they turn it over to you, you know, to DIFAS or some of the other ones, okay? And Child Protective Services, CPS, they turn it over to that. And they hope that they, you know, it'll work out through there. They're the ones that take people to court. They interview, they take people to court, and we hope that the right things happen. So the police department, they gather the information, they have the information, and they turn it over to the other organizations. So we're supposed to work hand in hand, and we need a lot more people working hand in hand, and I will leave it at that. Okay. Let me go down to Katrina. Is she still here? Oh, I think she, yep, she dropped off. Okay. She might come back. She may have lost her connection. All right. Yeah, that happens at times with her. Okay, so anyway, let's go back to your story. And you are today a certified coach. Is that not correct?
Yeah, that's
yeah.
correct.
So let's hear a little bit about what you're doing. Tell us how what it's like for you to be a coach.
Well, I haven't been coaching since I've coached very lightly since I've been over here. But as a coach, I've spent most of my career, I guess, mentoring and coaching within my career, either as a manager or a leader. And so when I was looking to leave, I had a lot of people suggest, why aren't you doing that on the outside? So it's just working with people for different reasons. A lot of my focus recently has been based on work. So if people are looking to change their jobs or they want a promotion, they don't know how to go about it, or maybe they want to do what I've done, which is quit their big job and go do something completely different, like a second life or second act, helping them through that, just plan it and understanding where maybe their fears are coming from, what their goals are, how they would get there, et cetera. So I've been blessed to work with some really great people of coaching, and it's been fun. I've helped a couple people actually find brand new jobs in careers they would have never expected to do. So it's been good. But right now I'm going to be 100% focused on university because it's kicking my butt. as a mature
Did you say universities? Yeah, good for you.
Yeah.
Because let me tell you something.
Yeah.
The things they should know, they don't know. This is what I found out. And for years now, I've been going to universities, again, except for this year because of the COVID. Now everything's shut down or everything's online, whatever. It's a mess. But it's good to educate. Even the professors don't have the information that they should have. You probably know that.
I'm not coaching them. I'm actually going to university myself. I'm enrolled at university for my third year. So I'm not coaching them yet.
Okay. Well, you'll see that those who want to become social workers, okay, like they want to work for a CPS or they want to work for some of the other divisions and DIFAS or whatever, they have to have a certain amount of training in child abuse. And unfortunately, this is why I've been called many times to go over to universities, mostly at Centenary, but I have been at others, to talk about my life and to show the pain that we go through because they don't get it. If they haven't walked in our shoes, they can't really talk the talk. You know what I'm saying? They can't. Book learning is fine, but if you have someone who is a a social worker, and also someone who's a survivor, then that person is likely to be a much better candidate to become a good social worker. And that's the truth. I see that Katerina has called back. Sometimes she has trouble. Katerina, you've been listening. I know you have. Is there something you'd like to say or ask a question?
Yes. Sorry, I was having technical difficulties, but I'm glad I got on. I'm glad that we're talking about this whole topic about competent care providers, social workers, counselors, even police.
Yes.
It's so important because the legal system can't work accurately and people can't get the care they need unless there is trauma-informed care in there somewhere, and I believe that there is a gap. Like, this needs to be taught. I think more people need to share their stories. Perhaps there needs to be more conferences in place for those type of professionals, lawyers, judges, policemen, social workers, all of them. They need a bit more education. And there are some amazing apples in that, field that do amazing work. But also there are lots of gaps that people end up being re-traumatized by the systems. And that's unfortunate. I feel like the story that we heard today is a prime example of how to get the courage to speak up. And also, what happens after you speak up, what could possibly happen. Each case is different, obviously. And justice may not always seem what we want it to be. Like, a lot of the time, these perpetrators, they tend to get a few years in jail, or they get released, or the victim is not believed, and that needs to change. Because a human being who's in pain, they're not going to go to that level of speaking out unless it was real and unless it actually happened. Most of us are really scared to talk. So, I just want to congratulate you for doing this, for continuing your journey, and for educating us by sharing your own story. And I'm sure more people listening in, maybe they're in this position, and it will help all of us become more successful at achieving a common goal, which is safety for all children. So that's all I wanted to say. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Yeah, that was very, very good and very nice of you. Thank you, Katerina. It's so true what she just said, though, because we have all these people out there in the positions of being a counselor or being a social worker. And more. Okay, being a psychiatrist, for God's sake. I've spoken to them too. What a riot that was. But anyway, and the police officers. And the point is this. If they don't have the knowledge like we have, because we have that knowledge of what it felt like, what we went through, how it impeded our life to the point where, it held us back. It held me back at times when I needed to move forward. Because at that point, I was still having my panic attacks. I didn't stop having panic attacks until I was 49, okay? And they started when I was 9. And there wasn't any medicine or anything like that that could help me. They tried. It didn't work. And so my medicine became alcohol and drug abuse. People, when you're kids, you're growing up. And I couldn't deal with these horrible, horrific panic attacks. That was slowly turning into the point where I didn't want to leave the house, I didn't want to leave the house because if I left the house, I might have a panic attack. It was ridiculous. It was like a circle. And it was keeping me from living my life as I wanted to live because I knew I had a lot to do, a lot of work to do. And I wanted to get out there and do it. And as a child, you're a child. You can't fix and straighten things out. As a teenager, you're still a child. And then when you get into your 20s, you know what you want to do, but you can't do it because you're still having problems. We have to heal. We have to get on our healing journey. And it doesn't matter where you get your healing from, whether it be from a therapist who knows what they're doing, who understands child abuse, and that's so important, or whether it be the church, like it was in my case, who had counselors there who knew about child abuse, and they straightened me out, and I was a mess, you know. And, you know, it doesn't matter where you get it from. You know, AA is very good for a lot of people. Bill swears by AA. That was so good for him. And so it doesn't matter, you know, where your help comes from. What does matter is that you realize it was never, ever, ever your fault. I had a good CPS worker when I was a child, when I was 8 years old and kidnapped and raped in New York, okay? She said to me, she took me aside, the CPS worker. She took me to my room for privacy's sake. And she said to me, listen here, I don't ever want you to ever think that this, any of this, and the stuff that you've been through, because I was through stuff before that, was ever, ever, ever your fault. Now, those words that she said to me were the most, one of the most important words that anyone had ever said to me, because my family always made me feel like I was somehow involved with what happened to me, that it was somewhat my fault.
Carol,
my brain
can I
told
add
me
to
no.
That?
Yeah. Sure.
Yeah, I was going to say something earlier about this. That's my CP. I think part of my resiliency, clearly I was born with something special to be as resilient as I was to get through all of that, but I do think it came from the CPS worker and the detectives and how they handled the situation back then. And I'm glad you brought that up about the CPS worker. I actually was able to talk to my CPS worker when I lived in Arizona, and I reached out to her again just a few months ago and found out that she actually passed away. But the importance of those initial contacts you have, and even being able to put him in jail, even though it wasn't maybe as long as definitely was not as long as I would hope. I think the act of doing that probably helped me, I think, with my resilience as well as I continued on. Just who knows what it was, but I give credit to those things.
Well, I think that we need, as children, if a person is incarcerated, a year is not a long time. Now, going back to the New York thing with me, I was one of 14 kids that had been kidnapped and raped by this monster. And he only got 3 years. He was sentenced to 3 years. That's it. And I do remember in my mind that I'm 8 years old, and when he gets out, I'll be 11, and he knows where I live. So you see, that bothered me. That bothered me. And, you know, they say that they don't usually go back and do things after to the same children anyway. But we do know today that, again, we can't cure these people. We can't cure them. Usually what happens when I gave that 1 to 2 year window before, when I had spoken, when a person, you know, is allowed to go back into society, oh, well, he or she, and I'm going to say she, is well enough to go back into society, they've learned a lesson. Yeah, hello. What they usually do, especially with tier one and tier two also, is they will commit petty crimes. It can be crimes like, you know, being a thief, becoming a thief, stealing things from stores, stealing things from people's homes, or they can turn assaultive. They can, become very angry because, you see, there's that thing that's gnawing at their brain that they want to go and get another child, okay? They just simply do. And yet they know that they're going to have consequences. They realize now, even if it was a incarceration for 1 year, like you just said, or 3 years, like with that guy that had 14 of us, he was incarcerated. But a lot of times they don't do the full time either. I was told that my guy got out a year and a half. I didn't know that. But he only did a year and a half of that three-year sentence, okay, for good behavior. Good behavior.
I hate those words.
I have a bad sense of, well, good and a bad sense of humor sometimes, you know, but good behavior. I'm very sarcastic at times. I don't mean to be. But the point is with them, I feel like I can be. There's no good behavior from those people because they don't know how to be good. Okay? It's as simple as that. So during that window of the period that I'm speaking about, the 1 to 2 year period, they commit other types of crimes, but then sure enough, they go back and they pick up some other little kid, and then another little kid, and another little kid, whatever the case might be, until they get caught again. And then in time, they're tier two, and then they're tier three. When I lived in Dover, I had a tier two guy. This is Dover, New Jersey. I was a landlady there, became a landlady. But anyway, enough of social services. I'd done it for like 20 years off and on. I said, you know what? I'm going to do something else. Okay, so, all right. So what happened with this guy was everyone knew he was a pedophile because the police department had sent around to everyone's house the picture and the address of this man. It turned into a zoo. Everyone wanted to go and see him. Everyone wanted to go and look at him. So everybody went to his house. Well, let me tell you something. He ended up moving out. He had to move out because it was lines of people and cars. Maybe this is a sort of a protest. Who knows? You know, they wanted to see. Unfortunately, it was right down the street from me. I didn't have to get in my car. And I already knew what he looked like because I saw him almost from my window. But other cars were going down the street and forming lines and circles around this man's house. He was a tier three. Tier threes are not supposed to be let out. Okay, you can't trust a tier three. That's where assault is so heavy. It's rape and assault. Maybe even with the intent to kill. But they got caught. And they let this monster out. So you bet there was lines of cars up against his house. And then he moved. He had to get out of there. It was just too much. So you see, this isn't anything to sniff at. Child abuse. Child abuse destroys children's lives until they get the help that they need. And if they don't get that help, then it goes into adult, you know, into their adulthood. Okay? And then in the adulthood, if we get our help, because it's never too late to get help, we can certainly become most of what we wanted to be or what we should have been. But this isn't something that just goes away. It doesn't just go away. This is something that resonates. It stays in our body, in our brain, in our heart, our system. It's just there for the rest of our lives. It's how we learn to handle it. Okay? And fortunately, there are many of us out there who do want to try to help people. And we do the very best that we can. Okay? And so society, you know, you can rest a little bit easier because there are a lot of us, I don't know how many, I couldn't tell you, that have the same feelings that we have right on this show, where we want to go out and we want to help kids. Okay? And that's an important thing. So maybe that's our purpose in life. You had a job that you said was very, very good. And so now you're a coach, and that's very, very good. It's what you want to do. It's your passion, and I believe it's your mission. And I think it's all of our mission. So I thank you for what you do.
Now, thank you for the time and allowing me to share my story.
Well, you know, it was a pleasure having you on the show. We have about 4 minutes. I'm going to go through the panel really quick and let people, you know, thank you, and maybe they have a quick question. Let's go to Darlene. Okay, Darlene, go ahead.
Hello. Thank you so much for showing up and telling us your story, taking the time. I appreciate it.
Okay.
Job well done.
Okay, thank you for that, Darlene. And William, do you want to say good night and say thank you?
Yeah, thank you, Holly, for sharing your story. And don't be a stranger when asked.
you're part of the family, so don't be a stranger.
I won't. Thank you.
Yeah.
You're welcome.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. We have a new sister to our family. Yes, we do. Okay, let's go to Bill here in Florida.
I want to express my appreciation for your coming on from Northern Ireland and for being our ambassador there. I want to give you free rein to, you know, within the mission of NASCA to represent us there, and I know you'll do a great job. Now, I should mention that, you know, we have a constant need for guests, Carol, as you know, and we were able to arrange to have her from Northern Ireland, even though, you know, it's a little bit of an arm's length away. It works. We have people from South Africa. We have people from Australia, New Zealand, so forth. But we need people. So I've put a new tool on the front page of the website. Next week, as an example, I only have one of 3 days booked. Monday is booked, but Wednesday and Friday, the 3 days we need special guests, are not booked. Mm-hmm. So there's a little bit of a tool now on the front page of the website that perhaps will help us identify the next 5 days that are not yet booked. And anybody who goes to the front page of the website will see it there. But it's a constant thing. And I'm really glad. I mean, I think it's obvious. I'll ask Holly to say it for herself, but it wasn't that hard to do the show, right, Holly? You did a great job.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. No, it was a lot easier than I thought it was going to be, and I actually have a lot of support on the call tonight, both from the States and Northern Ireland, so I feel so blessed. Many people stayed up it's 1:30 here in the morning, and many people stayed up for this for their Friday night entertainment or evening of instead of Netflix, and I got to thank them for that, right? And so,
sure.
It was nice knowing I had a lot of faces that I knew, and then, of course, your support, your team support. So thank you very much for letting me do this.
It's our pleasure. I just want to, you know, finally, I just want to say everybody does outreach, whether it's, you know, bringing in new members or getting new guests or whatever it is. We don't have a team that specifically does that because we consider that everybody's job. So I really appreciate it if people come up with ideas for guests, for example, and so forth. Thank you, Carol, for running a great show.
Well, thank you. And Katarina, she keeps popping in and out, and she popped out again. She has trouble with staying on, and I don't know, she has technical difficulties. But anyway, I know that she feels the same way. She expressed that earlier, too. That she was so thankful that you had come on, so I'll speak for her. And, you know, listen, you can come on any show. If you look at the front page of the website, you'll see Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday. And, of course, Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays, we have guests on like yourself. And on Tuesdays and Thursdays, we have professional people who are survivors as well. Come on and... there can be anything from a pastor to other types of advocacies, but all, you know, zeroed around child abuse. So anyway, I already got my 90-second cue here. So I want to thank everyone that came on here tonight. You really helped make a wonderful show. And Holly, please do, you know, come on the show more often. You're a NASCA member now, okay? And we very much appreciate you. And we admire you, and you have a lot to offer people. So thank you so much for coming on the show tonight.
Great. Okay. Thank you so much.
All You're right. welcome. And I'm going to say goodnight to everyone now. And tell your friends we said thank you for listening, too, okay?
Thank you. I will.
Okay.
Take care.
Okay.
Have a good weekend.
Okay.
All right.
You, too. Good night now. Good night, everybody, and thank you for being here. Okay.
Another tomorrow, 'cause that dawn will come. You are forgotten after all that you've done.
Blog Talk Radio.